Greetings from Church of the Resurrection, and thank you for taking time to listen to this message. We hope you find this message meaningful and relevant. We invite you to join us in worship at any time. We're located just south of 135th Street between Rowe and Nall Avenue in Leawood, Kansas. If you have any questions or comments, or you would like a DVD of the service, you may reach us by phone at 913-897-0120. Please ask for the Well Bookstore or visit our website at www.cor.org, where you will find a link for our catalog. And now, may you be blessed as you give attention to the reading of God's Word.
Today's scripture comes from the Gospel according to John, the 13th chapter. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. May God's Spirit help us not only to hear, but to do these eternal words. You may be seated.
Good morning. Heart to Heart is not just a passion of mine, it's also a passion of many of you as well. Though I serve as the president of Heart to Heart, I do it in a volunteer capacity. I'm actually a family physician, and I still work in rural hospitals, clinics, and emergency rooms. In fact, a week ago, last weekend, I was working down in Greensburg, Kansas, the town that was destroyed by the tornado. They have a brand new, beautiful hospital now. But many hundreds of you here at the Church of the Resurrection have supported Heart to Heart through the years. We are a volunteer organization, and you're part of it. You volunteer at our warehouse. You've gone with us on joint teams that have gone to, whether it's Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans or most recently in Haiti. Today, there'll be 25 or 30 volunteers every day there, doctors, nurses, medical personnel who are volunteering. I've spoken with some of you. Some of you have already been, and some of you are going. And I know your church has a great mission there as well. You know, I wish I could take the time this morning to tell you all the wonderful things that Heart to Heart is doing. But when Pastor Adam called me and asked me to speak this morning, he asked me to preach. I said, well, I don't preach, but I can speak. And so what I think I'm going to do is share with you really the motivation behind Heart to Heart. Not tell you a lot about our organization. You can go online and find out about that. But I hope that through my message this morning, you'll somehow sense the passion that our volunteers have, and perhaps this will inspire you to serve as well. Now, the title of my message this morning, The Power of Serving Others, is also the title of a book that I've written. So I know this is a kind of a cheap way to promote the book, but it is on sale after the service on $12 rather than $20 at the bookstore. Really, if everyone would just promise me that you'll buy it and read it, we can go ahead and go to the closing prayer and get to the cafeteria sooner than later. No, no clapping or amening. Let me get right to the point. Here's what I want to communicate to you today. There really and truly is power in serving others. In fact, it is in the power of serving that we actually see the power of God at work in the world. The bottom line is this: God works through you and me. God exercises His power through us, and God answers prayer through us and with us. You see, I know it sounds simplistic, but we really are the hands and feet of Christ in this world. Now, some of you are sitting here right now and you're thinking, oh, brother, not another sermon on service and trying to make us all feel guilty and beat us up about how we're not doing enough. I support the church. I give a lot of money to the church. Now what am I supposed to do? Go volunteer in some soup kitchen? Is that what this guy wants? Well, I don't know if there were soup kitchens back in the Bible times or not. But I do know this. In the New Testament, the very worst job in the world on the volunteers needed list was the job of foot washer. This was the crummiest, lousiest job there was. Back then, when you asked a bunch of people over to your house, you didn't just take their coats. You had someone wash their feet. And that job was the job of a servant. And not just any old servant. It usually was the servant at the bottom of the totem pole. Maybe volunteering in a soup kitchen is the modern day equivalent of washing feet. I don't know. But why would anyone in their right mind volunteer to wash feet? Or work in a soup kitchen, I guess. You know what? That's exactly, though, what Jesus did. And we read it in the scripture. It was on a Thursday night, the night of Jesus' Last Supper with His disciples. Within a matter of hours, Jesus would be crucified. And so this was His last time, the last time He had some quality time with his disciples. And what did Jesus do? Well, we read it. Jesus took a towel and a basin, and He washed the feet of His disciples. Now, think about it. If you had been working with a small group of people for 3 years, nearly full time, and this was going to be your last night with them, and you were going to just have, one last staff meeting, don't you think you'd really go over the game plan, really hit the high points, and make sure they understood what it was they were to do once you were pass the baton to him? Well, that's exactly what Jesus did. But with actions, not words, not just words. Jesus did something totally unprecedented. Something totally unexpected. Really, something totally absurd. This was Jesus. And what did He do? He grabbed a towel and a basin. And He washed His disciples' feet. The dirty, dusty, smelly feet of His disciples. He even washed the feet of Judas, who He knew was going to betray Him in a matter of hours. It makes you wonder, maybe Jesus was demonstrating the game plan. In fact, in verses 14 and 15, which were read, Jesus says, "You should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." Let me ask you a question. Do you think Jesus was speaking literally about feet washing? Does He actually and technically mean we're supposed to be out washing feet? If so, I think we've been missing the boat. How many of you have attended a foot washing ceremony? They don't happen too often. What Jesus is telling us, though, He's really using a metaphor, using feet washing, I believe, as an example. What he's telling his disciples and us is simply this, that we should serve each other. We should be willing to do the unglamorous, dirty, crummy, simple things that most normal people would never volunteer to do. And Jesus asked his disciples to do this, and he asked us as well. And that kind of love, my friends, that kind of serving is the most powerful thing in the world. It is the power of serving others. Now, as I look around, I can see some of you, your wheels are turning and you're thinking, what does this mean for me? What does this foot washing metaphor, this example, this call from Jesus to wash feet, what does it mean for me? Well, let me give you a couple of things to keep in mind. First, serving others doesn't have to be some grand, huge, complicated, big deal. Just serve with whatever you have. Serve wherever you are. Serve however you can. You don't have to be certified, credentialed, ordained, approved, appointed, asked. You don't have to have a degree. You don't have to have initials behind your name. You can simply do what Jesus did. There was a need in front of him. And what did he do? He served. When you see a person in need and you have the capacity to do something about it, just do what you can. Let me tell you about a person who taught me a lot about serving. She was a school teacher, and her name was Agnes. Do you remember your favorite school teacher? I bet every one of you can think of someone. Now, Agnes technically never taught me in school. She was a school teacher, and I learned a lot from her. You all actually know who Agnes is. You just don't know her by that name. Agnes was born, believe it or not, in Albania. She was, that's Eastern Europe, a little country. She was raised in the Catholic Church, and at the age of 17, this little Albanian girl named Agnes felt God calling her to become a nun. So she did. She joined an order in the Catholic Church. Now, as nuns do, nuns take on another name when they become a nun. And Agnes chose the name Teresa. Some of you now know who I'm talking about. Agnes became Teresa. She was sent to one of the poorest cities in the world to teach school. This little sister, short little sister, Sister Teresa, was sent to Calcutta, India. Now, if you know who I'm talking about, you're thinking, I thought she went there to serve the poor. No, Sister Teresa went to Calcutta to teach in a private Catholic girls' high school. That's what Sister Teresa went to Calcutta to do, not to serve the poor. Well, Sister Teresa is known, of course, as Mother Teresa. And you know who, of course, everyone knows who I'm talking about. She did teach school in Calcutta for 18 years. In fact, she taught geography. Geography. We probably have some geography teachers here in the congregation. But let's get real. I know geography is important, but honestly, did teaching geography ever change the world? Well, maybe for Columbus it did. I don't know. But really, that's not how Mother Teresa had her impact. After teaching for 18 years, she left the comfort of that private girls' high school. She saw a need around her, and God spoke to her and said, go out into the streets of Calcutta and serve the poorest of the poor. And that's what she did. She actually started a home for the dying. It's really a hospice. That's what we call a hospice. And every day, Mother Teresa would go out into the streets, gather up the homeless who were dying, take them to her home for the dying, and she and her sisters would care for them, love them, bathe them, feed them in their last days of life. I had the privilege of working with Mother Teresa over the last 10 years of her life. I went there to volunteer. One of the greatest lessons Mother Teresa taught me, though, about serving others was simply to do whatever I could with what I had. You know, if she would have waited for a bishop to ask her to start for a home for the dying, it would have never happened. If she had waited till she'd raised enough money to buy an ambulance or a van or whatever to haul these dying people to her home for the dying, she would have waited her whole life. But she didn't wait. Once she saw the need around her and God had spoken to her, she simply did what she could with what she had. You see, after 18 years of teaching geography, Mother Teresa spent the rest of her life washing feet, so to speak. I had something funny happen to me once that's a crazy example of doing whatever you can. Now, I guarantee you, this is one story you'll never forget. One sermon you're never going to forget, at least this story. And it really happened. It's a true story, and I'm sticking to it. I was in Israel. Well, let me just say this. As a doctor, I always stop at accidents. I know there's doctors out here, and most people think I'm crazy. I stop at every accident. In fact, if there's someone that I know of that's in need and I can help them out, I'll give my advice. Some of you may need to, you know, would like to talk to me after the service. Oh, I'll give you a free, I don't know about a free exam, but the narthex isn't exactly too private, but all I would ask is that you have a credit card number ready. No, I'm joking about the credit card, that is. I've already had several people ask me for some consults, and I'm happy to do it. But I was in Israel at the Tel Aviv airport getting ready to fly home. And as I was getting into the check-in line, I noticed an elderly lady fall to the ground. And when she fell, I thought, oh no, she's broken her hip. And I rushed over. I thought, this is what I do. I'll see what I can do to help. Well, she stood up, and so I knew it wasn't her hip, but I could see that she'd broken the bones in her wrist. I could tell that she'd broken her arm. I introduced myself and told her I'd be glad to help her. Her name was Mrs. Nielsen, and she was from Boston. And I explained to her, I said, look, you're certainly welcome to go to an emergency room here in Tel Aviv, but you'll miss your flight. If you want, I can take care of you. I said, it really won't hurt for me to put a splint on it, put you in a little sling, put some ice on it. I can even give you some pain pills that I have, and it won't hurt at all for you to fly back to Boston and see your doctor tomorrow. No big deal. Well, she agreed. Then I found out that her flight actually was leaving after mine, and so I said, Miss Nielsen, I can, if you want, I'll go with you through security, help you through security, and I'll get you out to the gate, and I'll make sure you get on the plane, and because you leave before I do. So we did. We headed out to security. Now, we got to the machines, you know, that you put your bags on, and I helped her with her bags. And as I was looking at that scanning machine, it suddenly dawned on me. This machine is nothing but a glorified X-ray machine. And wouldn't it be wonderful if I could get an X-ray of her wrist to see if, you know, the bones were in place and all that? Well, once I get something in my head, you know, look out. The word no doesn't exist in my vocabulary. I talked to the guy who was running the machine and convinced him how important this was, that I had a patient, I needed to x-ray her wrist. And, well, okay, maybe I did tell him that it was a matter of life and death. I don't know. But at any rate, he agreed. So I told Miss Nielsen, I said, Miss Nielsen, now stand up here to the machine, hold your hand out and stick it through those black straps, you know, that hang down. And just hold still. She did, and I told the guy to snap the picture. Well, the guy started shaking his head. I said, what's wrong? He says, it didn't work. I says, what do you mean it didn't work? And he goes, no. He says, the machine is working fine. He goes, it's just that you can't put in the object, you can't just put it in there and hold it still. It has to be on the conveyor belt, moving through the machine. That's the only way it works. And I said, well, no problem. By this time, Mrs. Nielsen's pain pills were apparently working because she was rather delirious, and she agreed to my plan. I said, Miss Nielsen, I'm going to have you lay down on this belt. I'm going to lift your legs up, and we're going to feed you through this machine. And we did. And not only did I get a great x-ray of her wrist, but I got an x-ray of her entire skeleton, of course. It worked. Now, why am I telling you this story? Well, it is a good example of doing whatever you can where you find yourself, that's for sure. But the point is, and like I said, you'll never forget this story. The point is, the lesson that I want you to remember is to do whatever you can. You don't have to wait till you have a real x-ray machine. In fact, some of you have lousy health insurance, large copays, and the next time you need an x-ray, you might just want to head out to the airport and jump in the machine. The point of the story is you don't have to go somewhere to serve. Of course, there are needs all over the world, and you can travel all over the world like Heart to Heart does and serve. That's great. But you know what? You can serve right where you are. You can serve with what you have available to you, but you can serve where you find yourself. At work, in your own homes, with your families, on your own street, shopping, at the gas station, at the grocery store. Everywhere you go, we run into people who are in great need. People, yes, with feet that need to be washed. Of course we need people to be missionaries. Of course we need people to go to Haiti. Of course we need people to volunteer at the soup kitchen. But the greatest opportunities we'll ever have to serve are the opportunities right where we live and work. Let me give you a real life example of what I'm trying to say. And it's a pretty strange example. If someone had predicted that I would have the opportunity to serve and to minister as a doctor on the battlefield, I would have thought they were crazy. I enlisted in the Army when I was 17 during Vietnam, and I got out. Thought I'd be out for the rest of my life, and as the years went by, I learned once I became a doctor that the military is really short on doctors. And I thought to myself, you know, that's something I can do. I could be a doctor in the reserves. And the thing that I really felt strongly about is that our soldiers deserve the best care they can get. And I thought, I'm a good doctor. Why shouldn't I be one of those doctors that can volunteer to take care of our soldiers? But the other thing that I learned about the military and about the Army is that not only do doctors take care of our soldiers, but they also take care of civilians who are caught in the crossfire. And the Army also takes care of its prisoners of war. We call them detainees now. That's also the mission of doctors in the military. And I decided I can do that, so I joined. Now, we've been a nation at war for many years. I've had the privilege of deploying several times, even to Iraq. And it was in 2004, January, shortly after the war was starting, that I was called up to deploy again. I didn't know what my job would be. I got to Iraq. When I landed in Baghdad, I was briefed. I was assigned to a military police MP brigade. This MP brigade was in charge of the Abu Ghraib prison. Remember 6 years ago when that terrible news came out about the abuse to the detainees and the prisoners at that prison? I was briefed about it. I was not assigned to that prison, but I was sent to a prison far from Baghdad out on the Iranian border. And it was my responsibility to take care of not only the soldiers working there at that prison, but also I was in charge of the health and well-being of all of those detainees or prisoners. I decided that nothing would ever happen on my watch like had happened at Abu Ghraib. I decided that we were going to treat every prisoner, every detainee, with the greatest of respect, of compassion, of kindness. Now you might say, well, where in the world did you get that idea? Well, remember the WWJD craze? Remember that? People wearing these bracelets that had WWJD stamped on them? What would Jesus do? There was actually a lady in one of the services that still had one on. And that thing had to be 10 years old. You can imagine what kind of bacteria was growing on that thing. She's probably going to discover a new antibiotic. WWJD, what would Jesus do? I called my medical staff together, my nurses and my medics, and I said to them, look, and many of them were Christians, by the way. I said to them, look, we know what's happened in Baghdad at this prison. It's not going to happen here. We're going to treat every person, every soldier, every prisoner, every detainee the way Jesus would treat them. Jesus even said to love our enemies, remember? So we committed that we were going to treat everyone with kindness, with compassion, to the best of our ability. Now, I got to tell you, it wasn't always easy. But we did what we could and we did it where we were. If someone had told me that even in the middle of a battle zone, you can find a place of service and ministry, I would have thought they were crazy. But you see, wherever you find yourself, even in a war zone, there is opportunity to serve. We can serve wherever we are. Finally, there's another very important lesson that Jesus wants to teach us through his example of washing feet. And it's this. Now, this is going to sound strange. It's not the American way. Jesus is saying to us, it's the little things that count. Now, isn't that the exact opposite of the way we're raised? I mean, little things count. Isn't it always better to be big? Isn't big better? If a little is good, isn't a lot more much better? I mean, that's typically the way we're raised. Jesus has it all backwards. It's upside down logic. Why would little be better? Well, I used to think this way. But Mother Teresa, she taught me many lessons in life, but she taught me a very important lesson about thinking big, which is what I was always raised to do. I'll never forget the first time I went to Calcutta to volunteer. I'd been working in a mission hospital in India, and I decided, you know, I need to go to Calcutta and volunteer. I need to meet this woman, this famous Mother Teresa, and volunteer. So I did. I went to Calcutta. I went to the mother house where Mother Teresa lived with her sisters. I knocked on the door and introduced myself, said, I'm a doctor. I've come to volunteer. They took me right to Mother Teresa, and I introduced myself to her, told her I was a family doctor. I had my stethoscope around my neck. I had a duffel bag full of medicines. I mean, I was ready to go. I wanted to see some patients. She had lots of volunteers, but very few doctors ever came to volunteer with her. Well, Mother Teresa was very kind, and she said, yes, I've got a place for you. Wonderful. She took out a piece of paper, and she wrote a little something on it and folded it up and gave it to me. And she said, I want you to take this because I want you to go to the Home for the Dying to volunteer. I was so excited. Yes, Home for the Dying. That's what doctors do. We take care of dying people, sick people. I didn't want to get sent to some orphanage and have to play with babies or the leprosarium with leper. I wanted to go where there were dying people, where I could save some lives. So I headed across town, had her little note in my hand. I should have probably, in retrospect, opened the note and read it so I would have been prepared. You'll understand here in a minute. I didn't. I went to the Home for the Dying, walked in the front door, and asked for Sister Priscilla, who I was supposed to meet. She came. I gave her the note, introduced myself. Of course, how could she not know what I was? I had my stethoscope around my neck. I had my duffel bag of medicines. And again, I'm a doctor here. I'm ready to see patients, ready to volunteer. She read the note, had this kind of funny smile on her face, and said, follow me. So I did. I was ready to see some patients. We walked out of that front area into a large room, a ward, full of cots laying along the wall. These cots were full of men who were dying. There I could see volunteers and sisters treating the patients, bathing them, feeding them. I thought we were going to stop and I'd start my rounds. We didn't. We went right through the men's ward and into another room. Now we were in the women's ward, all full of women. And I thought to myself, well, now, isn't this nice? They're going to start with the women first. That is really thoughtful. We didn't stop in the women's ward. I kept following Sister Priscilla. You've seen the pictures, the Sisters of Charity in their white saris with the blue fringe around them. I followed Sister Priscilla right through the women's ward, and we went into another room. It was the kitchen. Now, not a modern-day kitchen. It was rice and water cooking over an open fire. But I thought, we're in the kitchen? This is unbelievable. They're going to feed me lunch before they want me to see patients. These people are so nice. Well, we didn't stop in the kitchen. Went right out the back door into the alleyway. And there, Sister Priscilla pointed to a shovel and a bucket, 5-gallon bucket. It was laying next to a giant 4-foot-high pile of garbage. Now, wasn't like American garbage. You know, American garbage is basically paper and plastic milk jugs and cans and cardboard and things like that. No, this someone had already picked through that. This was a pile, a giant pile of smelly, rotting, putrefying food scraps and human waste from the patients. That's what this was. She pointed to the shovel and the bucket and said, "Doctor, I want you to take the garbage, put it in the bucket, carry it down the street. If you'll go that way several blocks, you'll see the city dump, and you can dump it there." I was dumbfounded, dumbstruck. Did she not see my stethoscope? Didn't she know who I was? A doctor, for heaven's sake. Why was I being asked to haul garbage? I mean, there were a couple dozen volunteers in there, kids, teenagers. Why didn't she ask them to do this job? Not me, of all people. Well, I went ahead and started shoveling, filling that bucket. Let me tell you, it took many, many trips back and forth that day through those several blocks of the streets of Calcutta until I had that entire pile of garbage moved. And every trip I made to the dump, I grew more and more angry, irritated, frustrated. I mean, it was hot, it was humid. All these people looking at me, this foreigner carrying garbage with a stethoscope around his neck, I'm sure they thought that was really interesting. Finally, I finished the job. It was late in the afternoon. Well, I knew the volunteers would be heading home. And I thought, it's really too late for me to see any patients now anyway. Besides that, they certainly didn't appreciate the fact that I'm a doctor. I mean, why should I go out of my way anymore? Might as well call it a day. But I thought I at least ought to say goodbye to Sister Priscilla. So I walked through the kitchen, through the women's ward, through the men's ward, up to the front. One of the other sisters saw me, and I said, "I'd like to say goodbye. I finished my big, important job, and I'd like to say goodbye to Sister Priscilla." She came. While I was waiting for Sister Priscilla, standing there, smelly, hot, hungry, I never did get lunch, I was feeling pretty sorry for myself. I mean, I'd spent a lot of money to get to Calcutta, India. I'm a doctor, and I had come to see patients. They wasted my time having me haul garbage. I was feeling really pretty bad, pretty upset. And as I stood there waiting for Sister Priscilla, my eyes landed on a poster that was hanging on the wall. It was on this poster were the words of Mother Teresa, and they were crudely, you know, hand-painted onto this poster board and stuck on the wall. And when I saw those words, it was like an arrow that ripped through my heart. I realized then why I had come to Calcutta. I realized then why God had me haul garbage and Sister Priscilla had me haul garbage all day, because I had a very important lesson I needed to learn. Here were the words of Mother Teresa. They're on your screen. "We can do no great things, only small things with great love. We can do no great things, only small things with great love." You see, I had a lesson I needed to learn. I thought volunteering and serving was about me and my abilities and my skills. It was not about that. It was about my willingness to do whatever needed to be done, whether it was hauling garbage or washing feet. You see, it's not the big things that count. It's the little things. It's the small things. That's what Jesus was trying to show us when he washed his disciples' feet. My challenge for you today is simply this. Where are the dirty feet in your world? Where are the needs that you run into every day? There are hurting people all around you, where you work, where you shop, where you live. Perhaps the hurting people that you bump into day after day are not homeless or hungry or dying. But as Mother Teresa said, almost everyone is starving for love. Let's show the people in our world that we care about them, that every person is loved and valued, that they're important to us, and that we care about even the simplest things, the smallest things, even dirty feet. Perhaps a towel and a basin could become the symbol of this church. St. Francis of Assisi said something very profound, and it's my own little paraphrase of it. He said this, Preach the gospel every chance you get. Use words if necessary. Preach the gospel every chance you get. Use words if necessary. You know, that's what Jesus was really saying in the scripture. That's what he was demonstrating to us. It's about our actions. Actions speak louder than words. And in fact, in verses 34 and 35 in the same chapter, Jesus says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this will all men know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." You see, the world will know we are Christians by our love. There truly is great power in serving others. Do whatever you can, wherever you are. And remember, as Jesus showed us, it's the little things that count anyway. Because we can do no great things, only small things, with great love. Are you ready to pick up a towel and a basin and go to work?